I'll order the House Committee on Education Subcommittee on Higher Education for Monday, April 9th, 2007. Welcome, members. We have, this is our last Subcommittee on Higher Education meeting for April. I will be moving to the full ed on Monday starting next week. We have our last but certainly not least informational meeting with President Bernstein from Portland State University. Welcome, Mr. President, and thank you for being here with us and completing our survey of our institutions of higher education.
Well, Chair Buckley, members of the committee, thank you very much for inviting me here. For the record, my name is Dan Bernstein. I'm the president of Portland State University. And I want to talk to you about PSU, Oregon's only international urban research university. We had some magnificent slides to go along with my presentation. So as I talk, you can just imagine all of the great slides about Portland State.
Look at the screen anyway.
I also want to introduce Mike Lane, who actually won't be doing the slides. Mike is our instructional designer and was here to provide support for today. Portland State is a mission-driven organization, and our mission is to enhance the urban to enhance urban life by providing access throughout one's lifespan to a quality liberal arts education and to graduate programs that are especially appropriate to the metropolitan region. PSU is a comprehensive doctoral granting university. That means we have a broad array of colleges and schools. We have a strong undergraduate curriculum, professional graduate programs, and we offer a growing number of PhDs. We also have the largest graduate program in the state of Oregon. We have an innovative undergraduate general education curriculum that's called University Studies, which has been replicated throughout the nation and throughout the world by other colleges and universities. The program is interdisciplinary in its approach and gives our students a small college learning experience, even though we're an institution of about 25,000 students. The students study in cohorts that are organized for the full year, and they are supported by peer mentors. University studies courses are steeped in the fundamental concepts of the social sciences, the life sciences, the humanities, and students are taught the basics of good writing, strong analysis, and civic engagement. The student's undergraduate education culminates with what we call a capstone project. This is an interdisciplinary opportunity to put their knowledge of theory to work on a real-world community-based work product. PSU has been selected as one of the best colleges in the West by the Princeton Review and has earned a place on the President's Higher Education Community Service Honor Roll. We've been recognized by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching for our innovative curriculum and outreach programs. And for the fifth year in a row, we were ranked among the nation's best colleges by U.S. News and World Report. Research funding has grown over the last several years, particularly in the sciences. This year, we will top $40 million in research grants and contracts. And let me just highlight a few areas where we have grown. The Center for Nanometrology, which is directed by Dr. June Zhao. This center is affiliated with ONAMI and is one of the most advanced on the West Coast. Nanoscience and nanotechnology promise to be significant economic drivers in the upcoming decades. The Oregon Transportation Research and Education Center, OTREC, is a $16 million national research transportation consortium that's housed at PSU and led by Dr. Robert Bertini in partnership with OSU, University of Oregon, and OIT, and supports interdisciplinary, inter-institutional research on multimodal transportation issues. The Child Welfare Partnership is a collaboration involving PSU's Graduate School of Social Work and the Oregon Department of Human Services. It is one of the first university-based programs in the nation to integrate child welfare research, training, and graduate education into a unified, coordinated effort to enhance services for families and children. Now I want to talk a little bit about the university district, about our neighborhood, our facilities, and our plans for the future. Over 10 years ago, PSU entered into an agreement with the City of Portland to guide the development of our campus so that it is consistent with the goals of the city for transportation, business development, job creation, housing, and open spaces. We call that plan the University District. We have worked in concert with the city on building new facilities, incorporating the streetcar and soon light rail into our campus, encouraging and supporting expansion of student and affordable housing in the district, and integrating retail businesses into our new construction. PSU is Oregon's largest university, as I said before, serving about 25,000 students. And that's up from 14,000 students when I came to PSU in 1997. Reports from our admissions office indicate that we may have our largest entering class this coming fall. I want to talk briefly about the governor's budget and the recently released plan developed by the Ways and Means co-chairs. I urge the legislature to adopt the governor's plan as an entire package. The co-chairs budget proposes substantive cuts in a plan developed to move Oregon's higher education system forward. Enrollment growth funding is essential if we are to continue to meet the educational goals of the metropolitan region. Since 2002, PSU's enrollment has grown 11%, which represents about 84.5% of the total growth in the system. Improving faculty salaries is also a priority. Our faculty are paid substantially less than their peers at other institutions, and the general disinvestment in higher education funding, combined with salary freezes that were imposed upon us, has put our universities at a significant disadvantage. The governor's capital construction proposal includes two PSU projects, renovation of Lincoln Hall and Science Building 2. Lincoln Hall is our hallmark building. If you saw yesterday's Oregonian, you saw pictures of the roof. It's the first building on our campus. It is in serious need of seismic upgrading and the new roof. Science Building 2 is the entry point for students preparing for careers in engineering, science, and the health professions. The laboratories are nearly 40 years old and are seriously out of date. Our enrollment in the sciences is so large that we are offering laboratory sections every day of the week, Monday through Thursday, and we offer lab sections beginning at 6 a.m. to meet our growing enrollment needs. The co-chair's budget provides only $50 million to meet the capital construction needs of the entire system, and that will not be enough to address PSU's needs, not to mention the entire system needs. Additionally, you may have read about Portland State's work with the city to bring Portland's historical records to our campus. The city's historical records will be housed in a building project which was approved by the emergency board last November. These city funds could match bonds if approved by the legislature and by our board to allow us to build a new home for the Graduate School of Social Work and maximize the height limitation on this site. I know that you've recently had a hearing on our programs in China. These programs are continuing to flourish, but so too is our work in other countries like Vietnam, Thailand, and so on. Internationalization of the university has been a priority for me because our students need to be global citizens and be culturally competent to succeed in the 21st century. We work to recruit international students because they bring an international perspective that is so important to the classroom and to the students who are place-bound because of family and work obligations. We're expanding the number of short-term study abroad programs so that these same place-bound students who are unable to spend a full year or full term away from Portland can study in an international setting for 2 or 3 weeks. In closing, I want you to know that your investment in PSU pays off. Last year, we did an economic impact study of the university, and we found out that the multiplier effect of our direct budget expenditures and other contributions generate more than $1 billion for the economy. And I'd say that that's not a bad return on the state's 2005-07 investment in our operating budget of $127 million. This is a great university that's located in a great city. Our motto, let knowledge serve the city, really defines what we do as a university. I want to thank you again for inviting me to be here today to talk about Portland State, and would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Nice photos, too.
Thanks.
Gentlemen, do you have questions?
I have one, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kremel.
President Bernstein, you mentioned in your comments about the Child Welfare Partnership, and I'm just wondering, are the graduates of the School of Social Work being placed in positions with DHS, and particularly in Child Protective Services?
Yeah, Chair Buckley, Representative Crummell, our school social work is a completely graduate program, and so people who leave the school social work are ready to move into the employment situation. We probably supply the majority of social workers and most state agencies and other NGOs and other type organizations in the state, since we are really the only graduate school of that discipline in Oregon. So the Graduate School of Social Work, along with our Graduate School of Education, are primary feeders into the employment market, both privately and in public agencies.
I'm not sure that my question was answered, but I appreciate what you're saying. I guess what I'm looking for is that because I've had reason to believe, as have many other legislators, that our Child Protective Services Division of Department of Human Services, that the caseworkers are not well trained, and that they are not prepared to handle some of the things that they get thrown at them, and that they are not they don't understand conflict of interest. Sorts of issues, and a variety of other things. And I'm just wondering if DHS, Child Protective Services in particular, are hiring their social workers, their caseworkers from your school, or are they getting them somewhere else? Are these graduates getting positions with DHS, or are they going to other organizations?
Chair Buckley, Representative Crummell, I mean, I don't have any specific numbers, but my sense is that certainly at the administrative level, Portland State supplies a number of people to DHS as assistant to other organizations. In terms of the qualifications and where the caseworkers come from, I just don't have the information to respond to that.
Thank you.
Representative Lim, do you have any questions for the President?
Not at this time.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. President, if you'll indulge me, I have a couple questions that if you could provide any more information on the Capstone Project. Very interested. Can you give me a little bit more of an explanation what the Capstone Project is?
Yeah, Chair Buckley, the Capstone Project is a requirement for graduation for our undergraduate students. And it requires our students to work in relatively small teams, five or six students. They work with a faculty member to develop a project. Normally, it's a project that serves a non-profit agency, but we're doing more and more work for for-profit agencies. And the range of projects vary significantly, putting together brochures, developing business plans for companies. The students are required to work in teams, and because we're the most diverse university in the state, they also will often have to relate to students across ethnic lines, because we have a large number of international students. That's another line of conversation that they have to cross, in addition to working across disciplines. You'll have the business school student with an opera singer, with the poli sci major, and they have to figure out a common kind of language, if you will, and then deliver a work product. And it's more than busy work. It's actually something that the company uses in its work. And so in some ways it's a replication of the real world, and the students are, I think, better prepared to go out and function in the work environment as a result of the experience.
And in your experience, has it been welcomed by the community?
Extremely so. In our economic impact study, I think we valued, in terms of the amount of value to the region, millions of dollars in terms of the quality and the nature of the work that we produce.
And how long has the Capstone Project been part of your...
University Studies, I'm sorry, Representative Buckley, University Studies was in existence probably about 4 years before I arrived. So we're heading towards our 15th year. One of the major challenges with a program like that is we really are providing almost a small liberal arts learning experience and learning environment in a university of 25,000 students. And so it's relatively expensive. We have also in the past offered cohorts of the program in some of the high schools in the region as a way of introducing students to college work and, you know, how they can really look at the first year curriculum much more holistically. Our ability to expand that and continue that has been hampered primarily because of, you know, budgetary constraints.
Very interesting. Can I ask you about the university district? How long that plan has been in effect, or where are you in the process?
Representative Buckley, the university district was adopted by the between the city and the university, probably around the same time that we did the university studies program, so you know, close to 15 years ago, and it's really an opportunity for us to have a fairly common understanding of how we want to develop the university in conjunction with how the city continues to develop. And that plan, along with working with the Portland Development Commission, has really allowed us to facilitate significant construction on campus. We have every form of public transportation coming to our campus, and that's been largely a result of our ability to work with the city and the county to make PSU one of the major transit stops on campus. We have 40% of our students and faculty who use public transportation and so on, so it's really been a great partnership for us.
Well, that's where I was going with my next question in terms of that. I really appreciate that information. Can you comment briefly, and I hope you, it's okay for me to just keep throwing these questions at you,
sure.
In terms of housing for students and the efforts for affordable housing for students, where would you see right now the typical PSU student being able to afford a place to live while they attend school?
Chair Buckley, that's a real challenge. One of the things that we found early on is that one of the major impediments to our ability to continue to recruit, especially international students and out-of-state students, has been lack of affordable housing. And, of course, downtown, the number of apartments are continuing to shrink as the number of condominiums continue to grow. What we've also found is that there are a growing number of students who historically have been commuters who are now looking for a regular residential college experience. And so we have students who would normally be commuting from Hillsboro or even Portland, moving into our residence halls and looking for a regular college experience. And so we clearly see the need to continue to try to build more and more housing for our students. We opened the Broadway a couple of years ago right at Broadway in Jackson, which is a 10-story, 284-bed student housing project, and we expect to do some more development of student housing in the future so that we can not only attract a growing number of international and other students, but also the what historically have been the commuter students who really want to just have a quality urban experience, even though they you know, may live in town.
Very good. And you mentioned in your testimony the quite astounding level of growth that PSU has experienced. What do you project for the next 10 years? Can PSU sustain this level? Or?
Well, you know, that really remains to be seen, Chair Buckley. Especially in light of the you know the budgetary constraints, and that'll be a major impediment to growth. Although we're also looking at some other other avenues for growth, including partnering with our community colleges in the metropolitan region to offer more and more degree completion programs on their campuses to leverage their parking, their facilities, their faculty, and so we have a consortium that's between PSU and the community colleges that I think will be very effective at delivering those services. But we anticipate that we could be as many as 35,000 students in the next 10 years if we have the budget support to make that happen.
And the facilities.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Thank you so much. Representative, gentlemen, any other questions? Did you think of?
Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
Here. Best of luck to you and the PSU.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Can you stand at ease? We're going to go fetch our next presenters on the two. Ready. Oh, turn it off. So, let me go ahead and close it.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to close the informational hearing on Portland State University. Now we're at ease.
With the forum here, we have an approach to move. I mean, we're okay to move this thing to if the
quorum is
three's a quorum.
Yeah, we have a quorum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, do you have anything else in public session sometime on the bill?
The opening public hearing on House Bill 3243. And Representative Reed, come on up while Mr. Olson give us a description of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3243 establishes a credit against personal income tax for amount paid by eligible taxpayer to the eligible post-secondary institutions as tuition for coursework taken by a taxpayer. It limits the credit to lesser of the amount of tuition paid by the taxpayer or the median tuition amount paid at a state institution of higher education. It applies to amounts paid in tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2009. The committee has before it a Dash 1 amendment, which replaces the text and makes the key changes. One, it changes the date of graduation to 2007 rather than 2006. It gives a larger time frame, so rather than a four-year eligibility period, it has a 3 years for community college, 5 years for four-year university or college, and also adds a category where a person could first go to community college, then 3 years, and then get a four-year degree afterwards. It also modifies the tax credit to be $125 a year for 2 years for community college or $250 per year for 4 years for a four-year college. The bill has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Reed, welcome. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
I
look forward to hearing about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27. Glad to be back with you for what we're calling the Earned Education Tax Credit. It's a fairly simple concept, and your administrator summarized it well. So I will skip those details and explain to you why I think this is important. If we're to build the Oregon we want, I think you're dependent on every Oregonian's ability to live up to their full potential. And it's only with the rich, diverse, deep pool of talent, perspectives, interests, and pursuits that Oregon can be the community we want. And I think to get there, we have to do all we can to make sure that Oregonians don't limit their thinking. They're comfortable dreaming big. A big part of dreaming big, I think, almost a prerequisite, is the feeling that education beyond high school is available and accessible. No shortage of evidence to demonstrate the value of higher education. There's hard evidence. I read a part of a U.S. Census Bureau study last night from 2002 that shows that annual earnings for college graduates exceed annual earnings of high school graduates by more than $20,000. And there's also, I think, no shortage of anecdotal stories. How many can we think of stories of people who go off to college only to conceive of an entirely new career path or ambition? And think of what that might mean if we could have more Oregonians availing themselves of that chance. More Oregonians with post-secondary education means a deeper, richer, and more diverse talent pool willing to dream big and overcome our challenges and obstacles. So clear that we want more Oregon students going to college, but the intent of this bill is also to help them finish and to help them stay in Oregon so that we can realize some of those benefits. That's why our bill offers a tax credit to a specific population, graduates of Oregon high schools, and why it offers that tax credit at a specific time, only after the student has graduated from college. We want to be inclusive, so as you heard, community colleges and four-year institutions, public and private, are all included. And yes, certificate programs at community colleges would also be eligible. The only requirement we're making is that the student graduate in a reasonable amount of time. There are two kinds of students our bill seeks to affect. Some students know they're going to college. The only question for them is whether they'll go in Oregon or somewhere else. And the other category we're seeking to target is folks who may not think of college as a viable option. And so our intent, hopefully, is to give the colleges, their counselors, inject into that discussion a statement of support to say, if you can do this, we want to help, we'll give you a tax credit of up to $1,000 when you finish. We're hopeful that could be a significant tipping point as students consider their college options. If the bill passes, we'd offer a $125 credit for each year of community college and a $250 credit for each year to four-year institution. You heard about the Dash 1 amendments. We've been working on this concept for a while, so we're continuing to refine it, and the Dash 1 amendments represent where we are now. And while we don't have a final revenue statement, I wanted to let you know we've been working with the Legislative Revenue Office throughout, and as they tighten their models, we can give you sort of a sense of scope. We're talking here about no more than a couple $1 million a year when it gets fully implemented. And remember, that's some time down the road as high school graduates would go on to community college or four-year institutions or both. And let me acknowledge, too, that this is an experiment. So there is a sunset on the earned education tax credit. And let me just sum up. I don't think it'd be possible to overstate the importance of higher education, in especially in the current era. So perhaps to do that, to sum it up, I should look back to one of our founders, both of the country and of the University of Virginia. Jefferson said, in talking about the University of Virginia, in establishing an institution for them, we secure it to all future generations. And in fulfilling this duty, we bring home to our own bosoms the sweet consolation of seeing our sons, and I might add our daughters, rising under a luminous tuition to destinies of high promise. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to be before you today. I urge you to adopt the amendments and pass the earned education tax credit on to the Revenue Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Gentlemen, any questions?
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of questions. Representative thank you, Representative, for being here today. I'm because the Dash 1 amendments replaced the bill, I've been turning my attention there as you were speaking. One of the things that I'm curious about, though, and maybe this is one of those refinements that needs to occur, is that on line 17 of the Dash 1 amendments, it says received in a post-secondary institution as defined in ORS 348.180. And in looking through there, it has a variety of different the definitions, but for institutions of higher education, it has under the State Board of Higher Ed or community colleges, OHSU, an Oregon-based generally accredited not-for-profit institution of higher education, and then it goes on to other things. So what this does is it does leave out institutions such as career schools, and also it leaves out schools such as the University of Phoenix. I don't know if that was your intention or not, or if, but these are schools that also, you know, students that may graduate from Oregon high schools would be going to, and they're accredited.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Crummell, I am aware of that, and thank you for bringing it up. My intent is to, you're right, it does leave those folks out, but I think there is an important distinction there that those institutions are for profit as well. So my hope is, as we spend public dollars, that we would be spending them at nonprofit institutions.
Okay. Follow up. Thank you. I noticed in Section 3 that you're basically pushing this off to the next biennium. To the biennium after next, because the next biennium is 07-09. And this doesn't take effect until tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2009. Why did we push it out that far? Why didn't we go ahead and have it start January 1, 2008?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Crummell, part of the effect of this, if it passes, is to be used as a marketing tool, for lack of a more sophisticated term, to allow students to think about the possibility. So what we're hoping is that when this takes effect, we would do it in a way that the students who are entering their senior year of high school would have a full year as they go through the admissions process and think about what they might be doing after high school. This would be part of that discussion. And of course, you're right to point out that it doesn't have a fiscal or a revenue impact until sometime down the road, but it's an important element of this, I think, that it's only available after the student graduates as an incentive to finish, so it wouldn't be available until the students graduate.
Mr. Chair, follow up, thank you. But if a student graduated from high school this spring, in just a couple of months, and then went to a community college for 2 years and got an associate degree and then went into the workforce, they're not going to be able to claim the tax credit because they won't have been in school either one of the two tax years before this takes effect. So in essence, you've got a whole class primarily this year's graduates, high school graduates, that are left out.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Crummell, that's true. And there are students who are currently in college who would not benefit as well. I certainly think that we should be doing more in general to help people have access to higher education. This is just one small piece. I view it as a marketing piece that we could target students who are thinking about what they'll do. And I don't intend in advancing this to make any commentary about our other efforts to expand access to higher education. I hope we can work together on those things.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Representative Lim.
Thank you. Representative Reed, thank you for bringing this bill. And do you know any other states have a similar programs?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Representative Lim, I don't actually know that. I think it's a new approach, at least in Oregon, and I hope we can give it a shot. But I don't. I'm not aware of similar things in other states.
Okay. And another question. Well, why do you limit up to $1,000? Because, you know, nowadays the higher ed is cost quite a bit. Even community college is at least $3,000, which is the highest in the 17 Western regions. So I know this $1,000 is a good amount, but that, you know, it could be higher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, you're absolutely right. And this represents an experiment. I hope it works. I hope it does so well. I hope that we can demonstrate after some number of years that this is actually a net benefit to the state as more people graduate and stay in Oregon, earn more, and pay more in taxes, and that we could expand it. But I recognize that we're in, I recognize to some of the budget era and environment we're in. I was looking for something that is viable. And in conversations with financial aid and admissions professionals at institutions around the state, their advice was to keep something very simple, a round number that would be easy to administer and easy to talk about with prospective students. So that's how we settled on $1,000.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative, I have a couple questions off the dash one. You had mentioned a sunset, I can't find it in the text of the dash one, so I'm wondering if you could maybe, if you know where it is, you could point it out to me.
Mr. Chair, I confess I don't see it, but it was a significant topic in our discussions with Legislative Council and Legislative Revenue, and we will make sure that it is there. I'm at a loss. I'm embarrassed to say I don't see it at the moment.
Right. That's true. My committee administrator does mention this can be amended in revenue as well. Should we pass it on? We also need to pass it to our full education committee as well to move forward. Can you tell me then, Representative, just absent the sunset, how would this work in terms of the time frame available? My son, for instance, with any luck, is going to graduate in June. He's crossing our fingers. Say his buddies who are juniors now, they graduate with the class of 2008. They say one of them takes 5 years to get through, so that'd be they graduate in 2013. How long would that student have to take advantage of this? Would they have to take advantage of that credit the following tax year, the following subsequent tax years?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It would. There are a couple scenarios that could emerge, of course, based on which course a student would follow. If they went first to community college and then to a four-year institution, or just community college, those sorts of things. But the basics are that there would be $125 credit for each year spent in community college and $250 credit available for each year spent at a four-year institution. Those would be available in the tax year following the person's graduation from any of those institutions.
Very good. Thank you very much, Representative. It's a very intriguing idea. I appreciate you bringing it forward.
Thank you.
We have other testimony on the bill as well.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Our chancellor is here, a common visitor to this committee. Chancellor Prince, there, would you?
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Pernsteiner with the Oregon University System. I am encouraged by this bill, and I'm encouraged because it represents a change in the discussion that we've had in Salem over the last several sessions, and I think it's a positive change because it talks about incentives for students to complete their degrees, incentives for Oregonians to become productive members of Oregon's economy after completing their degrees. And I think those are important messages to send to the young people of the state, and they counter some of the messages I think that we've sent in years past. So in that respect, I'm very encouraged by this bill. I think it will have some positive effects on the state. I think it should help us in our quest to increase the number of graduates. It should help us in our quest to increase the number sooner than we otherwise might. And it should help us in the quest others in this building may have to generate state taxes sooner than we otherwise might. Because I believe that there is a tie between economic development and the educational attainment of our population and our workforce. So I think all of those are very positive. And I'm encouraged that we are having this conversation about providing incentives. I believe that we need to provide means for students to be able to complete their degrees more swiftly than in the past. We have, as we've talked about before, found ways over the last few years to streamline the connections between the community colleges and the universities, and now between the high schools, the community colleges, and the universities, in order to allow students to move through more rapidly from a curricular standpoint. We are, with the proposal before you on the shared responsibility model, trying to find ways to allow Oregonians to recognize that they can afford to go to college and that the state will assist them in doing that. And this will then complete a sort of a third incentive, if you will, for Oregonians to complete degrees by saying, if you do it,
we actually will give you credit for it on your taxes. An important message. My only concern with the bill, and of course it's a big one, is that the funding, the reduction in the taxes that will occur because of the credits not be substituted for investment in higher education. In other words, I would hope that this body would not choose in biennia yet to come to reduce the funding for community colleges or for universities. The funding that we need in order to educate the number of Oregonians whom we need to have as productive members of our society in order to pay for what I think is a very good idea and a credit that will, longer term, generate more money than it costs. But in the shorter term, I would hope that it not be used as another means for reducing the state's investment in its community colleges and universities.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Gentlemen, any questions? Representative Lim.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether this will apply, but this bill applies for our own students going our own community colleges and universities only. And it might be translated as discrimination from the student from the other state coming here, and some kind of a legal matter. So how can you interpret that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, one of the subsections of this bill actually deals with those students who might change from being non-residents to residents during the time of their being here. And there is a very, very rigorous process that has to be gone through before anybody can do that, and almost nobody actually ever is able to meet all of our tests. For the purposes of at least the university system, if you enter as a non-resident, you almost certainly will complete as a non-resident and therefore would not be eligible under this provision. However, there are exceptions to that, and there have been cases, and I probably sign 4 or 5 of them a year, where we actually make determinations that somebody should be counted as a resident under some very narrow prescriptions. And, of course, they would then, just like regular Oregon residents would, qualify for this.
So one more follow-up questions.
Representative, please.
Maybe the same line of category. In our state, in our country, that the growing number of illegal residents continually growing. They are attending from their K through 12 and higher ed. Are they eligible to take this special tax exemption? I'm not sure whether that has been discussed or not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, we have not had that discussion with the sponsor of the bill. I don't know the intention. I will say under our current residency rules, which were adopted by the board, you have to be in legal status to qualify for residency for fee-paying purposes at OUS. So under current rules, I don't believe that those students about whom you're speaking would qualify, but I'm not an attorney. I can't actually tell you that for sure.
Okay. Thank you. Just something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative. Any additional questions? Mr. Chancellor, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Rick Levine is here from the community colleges. Mr. Levine, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Buckley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Richard Levine. I represent the Oregon Community College Association. I'd like to thank Representative Reed and also the Chancellor. This is a wonderful bill, and the community colleges can support the bill in concept. We do have the same issue that the Chancellor articulated to you, and that's the fact that our budget has been severely cut for this biennium. The capital construction is being heard today at this body, and so it's very difficult then to take a look at a bill that does quite a bit of good and to say that we have to stand neutral on it until those issues are dealt with. And this morning, the Community College Legislative Committee, a committee that represents all the boards of the community colleges, made a statement that given the current situation, bills that have any fiscal impact on the general fund, that the community colleges will either have to stand neutral or oppose until the current budget situation is dealt with, until capital construction is dealt with. We don't like to say that, but the issue for us, as the Chancellor mentioned, is very simple. We don't know the fiscal impact of this bill and other bills that might come before you, and we don't know the effect that that would have on our budget now or in the future. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. It's a perfectly understandable position. Any questions for Mr. Lemieux?
Just a comment.
Representative Lim.
And that the co-chair's budget has been cut, but that is not permanent, that is not final. We all working together to make sure community colleges and higher ed properly taken care of, in my opinion. So let's work on it.
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, we understand that. We understand that. Please understand that we are in a political arena, and we do have to deal with our particular issues. But in one way or another, I think we've talked to all of you, and we do understand your position. And we know we have a long way to go in the session before all of the budgets come out. So thank you for that comment.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Ms. Levine. Brett Rulett. Rulett from the Oregon Student Association.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. My name is Brett Rulett, Legislative Director for the Oregon Student Association. We represent over 100,000 students in Oregon at its universities, community colleges, and OHSU. And today I'm here to ask you to support House Bill 3243. I'm not going to read the written testimony that I'm turned in for you all. And the Chancellor already hit on a couple points that I included in our testimony. But we see this bill as being positive in a couple different ways. Right now, Oregon students, according to the Department of Education, take on more loans than any other state in the country. Over three-quarters of students in Oregon's universities rely on student loans, graduating with an average debt over $19,000. And so it's in their interest, as well as the state's interest, to get them out of the system as soon as possible. And what we have seen over the past 15 years with the state's disinvestment in our higher education system is that students are taking longer and longer to graduate. So we see any means of encouraging them to graduate sooner as a plus, because not only are they adding to their debt load, but they're also filling the seats of high school graduates that are graduating in record numbers from our high schools. So we do need them to graduate so that there's space for the high school students that are coming in. At the same time, part of the reason that these students are staying in Oregon's high school or in Oregon's universities and colleges is because of the state's disinvestment. Classes that used to be offered every term on a regular basis are now offered once or twice a year. So if you have a certain class that's required to graduate that's offered fall term and fall term only, as well as a prerequisite that you might need in order to get into that class, it takes you longer to actually get those requirements taken care of, because we have students that may have to wait an additional year just to take the one class that's necessary to graduate. So while we see this as a good bill, at the same time, we are asking that the state reinvest at proper levels in the university and community college system. 43% of students in a report that we released last month, 43% of seniors in Oregon's universities said that they experienced having to stay in school longer because they didn't have classes available to them. So while we would like to see this bill extended to all students, we see it as a great first step. It's going to encourage students to graduate sooner. It's going to keep them in our state. To answer a question that Representative Lim had earlier, other states are looking at doing similar things. They haven't done it yet. But in Wisconsin, they were looking at if you were a graduate from the University of Wisconsin and stayed in the state for 10 years, they would pay you back the cost of your education. Indiana was looking at, if you graduated and stayed in the state a certain period of time, of giving you a down payment to put towards a home or a condo, something that keeps you in the state. Those states also have different tax structures and different funding levels for their universities, but it's something that other states are looking at. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today. We encourage you to support House Bill 3243.
Thank you very much. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here in support of the bill.
Representative Greenick, good to see you. Representative Reed, while we have a moment, do you have anything else you'd like to say to, after everything you've heard here, or are you just ready to let us go?
I'm ready to let you go. Thanks to all the
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3243. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3243.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crowell.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. I like the concepts in the bill, and I think that there are some good points here. The only thing that bothers me about the bill is that it doesn't include the career schools and schools that are viewed as being for profit, such as University of Phoenix. Those students could certainly use a tax credit also, and I, you know, would prefer to see them added in. The other thing I'm wondering too is that I'd love to see this thing backed up a year in terms of when students can start claiming it and have it.
So my son would be
for the January have it effective January 2008 instead of 2009. All of that said, my question to you is, would the sponsor entertain amendments to take care of those issues? And if that were the case, would you entertain the idea of moving it to the full committee unamended, but then amend it at the full committee? And I'm just wondering if you are interested in that, or if it's sort of, you know, the dash ones or nothing.
Sure, Representative, I do think we are going to have it further amended because there is no sunset in the dash one, so there will be a dash two, and you could certainly talk with Representative Reed in terms of what would be in the dash two. I would hesitate at changing the dates on it personally. It's Representative Reed's call since it's his bill, but because of the situation we're in currently with the even with the governor's proposed budget or other proposed budgets, it's higher ed and colleges are still stressed, and I'm not sure whether this bill would get traction in this current budget. So that would be a concern I would have for Representative Reed if we change the dates on it. But I would be very comfortable of moving the original bill to the full committee at this point, and I would give a chance for amendments to be drafted, dash two amendments to be drafted, which could be adopted in the full committee.
Well, if that's the case, Mr. Chair, without amending it here, I would move that House Bill 3243 be moved to the full Education Committee. Here again, with a conditional recommendation. I don't know,
Mr. Wilson. I don't think we get a conditional.
I don't believe so. But the other thing, Mr. Chair, just for the record, my understanding is that even if we were to adopt an amendment, it still has to be readopted in the full.
Right.
So either way, I think as long as if it's the decision of the committee to move it in the full, we could deal with the amendment, either this one or a subsequent one in the full committee. Or it also could be amended in the Revenue Committee.
Do you want it with the due pass recommendation?
I would appreciate the due pass recommendation.
With the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kremble has moved House Bill 3243 to the full Education Committee with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Greenlick.
Mr. Chair, almost having the opportunity to provide a courtesy no vote in the last session, I'm providing a courtesy yes on this and will out of the full committee as well. I'm very disturbed by the amount of revenue expenditures that we have on the books, and I've been making almost a flat policy to vote against any new ones, even ones that are very that are very worthy, as this one is very worthy. So I'll have to decide how I'm going to do on the floor, but I will vote yes today and yes out of the full committee when it's amended.
Thank you, Representative.
And then try and figure out what I'm going to do on the floor after that.
Any further discussion? Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Sun.
Excused.
Representative Greenwood.
Aye.
Representative
Crumholm.
Aye.
Representative Lynn.
Aye.
Chair Buckley.
Aye. The motion carries. Representative, when we do meet in the fall, it would be wonderful if you'd come back and join us again. And please keep us in the loop on the drafting of any amendment for Dash 2. Thank you so much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3243. And I'd be happy to reopen the work session on House Bill 3243. That's all right. Would you care to vote on
I would, please.
Would you record Representative Clem's vote, please, Annie?
Aye.
It's an aye. Thank you very much.
We're just going to
start to hear. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3243. We're just about to hear a public hearing on the next bill.
Okay.
If you're involved, we'll call you for the vote.
Thank you,
Representative. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3345. And as Mr. Olson dashes back into his seat, I will ask him to review the bill for us, please. Hey, Representative Hunt, if you'd like to come on up, we'll be starting with you. And Senator Monroe is here with us as well. Go ahead, Mr. Olson.
Chair Buckley, thank you. Members of the committee, House Bill 3345 appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Higher Education for capital construction. It limits for a six-year period beginning July 1, 2007, payment of expenses from bond proceeds and other revenues, including federal funds, collected or received by the Department of Higher Education for capital construction within the Department of Higher Education and by the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for capital construction at community colleges, sets the expiration date on project approvals and expenditure limits, establishes accounts related to issuance of general obligation bonds, under Article 11G of the Oregon Constitution. It authorizes the State Treasurer at the request of the State Board of Education to issue bonds under Article 11G of the Oregon Constitution for capital construction at community colleges. Declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007, and it has a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Gentlemen, welcome. And it looks like Representative Hunt's going to go first. Welcome back to the Education Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Aren't you meeting in a different room than we just were when I was before you?
We have the mirror image of ourselves.
I appreciate you hearing this bill today. We really do have both a great opportunity and I think a real challenge as you look at community college capital construction funding. We've obviously had a dynamic in Oregon where for the last 30 years we have basically done almost nothing. And the community colleges, to their credit, rather than just kind of trying to continue that trend and come here and try and play us off of one another, they have all come together behind a common list of priority projects. And so the projects under the community college side that are listed here, 15 projects totaling $108 million, to be leveraged and matched by an additional, at least a similar amount from each of those community college districts. It is a real tribute to them because, frankly, we have not encouraged them by our actions as a legislature in recent years to work collaboratively. We've frankly encouraged them functionally to fracture and try and fight against each other to claw their way into a position of getting something done. But to their credit, they've come together. They've prioritized these projects. They've also put a very clear workforce development focus on it. So it's not just spending money. It's really investing money in their future capacity to be able to attract students, educate students, and train the future workforce for the next generation. If you look down at these community college projects, you will just see one after another things that are really very much workforce focused, especially in the health professions. And so we've got a real opportunity by adopting this as a package to be able to make an investment across our state, not just in Clackamas County, not just in eastern Multnomah County that my colleagues will talk about, but throughout our entire state in these very worthy projects. And I would again note the whole 50% match issue, because I think a lot of projects that we look at as a state, we don't have the ability to leverage those kind of additional dollars. The way this is constructed, if the community colleges do not come up with that additional 50% match, they would not get the money. Now, this package will look very similar to a package that the governor introduced. We actually attempted to have this drafted as just the community college package, but the way legislative council drafted it, they took the governor's entire OUS capital package and then added on the what I would argue is the corrected community college package list. Now, I'll tell you, Clackamas Community College, my community college, is on both lists. So I'm really, Representative Berger and I and the others you can see on that really brought this forward, not because it benefits our community, because we think it's a fairness issue. We also think it's an important statement to encourage the community colleges to continue to function together, to continue to collaborate where they can, to make sure they're strengthening programs in different campuses that serve different parts of the state, and to continue to come before us collaboratively prioritizing projects. So I think this is a very important project. As you can see from the co-sponsors, it has broad bipartisan support, and I would encourage your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Representative.
Senators, which of you would care to go first?
Me to go next? Thank you, Lori. I'm Senator Rod Monroe, District 24. I'm also a member of the Mount Hood Community College Board. I've been elected about 2 years ago. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Mount Hood Community College Child Care Child Development Center. The Child Development Center on the Mount Hood campus is about 35 years old, and when it was first instituted on the campus, it was put into old modular buildings. They were old at that time, 35 years ago. Today, they are severely deteriorating. In fact, we marvel each time we are recertified to continue to function in there. When you turn on two switches at the same time, it blows the circuit breaker. There are other serious problems. And then the federal government is instituting new regulations that further restrict the number of students that we can serve in our Child Development Head Start Center. The Child Development Center on the Mount Hood campus is an absolutely critical to many of our students. We have many, many single-parent students who want to better themselves, who would like to train, for example, as nurses at our new Bruning Center, or train themselves in some other way to get off of minimum wage jobs. With child care costing between $600 and $1,000 a month, many of these students simply could not afford an education if they didn't have child care for their little ones. This child care also, of course, provides for Head Start program, giving the 3 and 4 year olds a boost into school, increasing the likelihood that they'll be successful in school and successful in life. So it's a win-win. We're afraid that our center is, well, we know that our center is going to have to close if we don't, if we're not able to build a new facility. And even if we're allowed to stay open for another couple of years, we'll be able to serve 15% fewer students than we have because of the new federal regulations. So that's where we are. Now, we got kicked off the governor's list because we lost our bond. And we had in that bond a $16 million program that we were going to, of course, match 50%. And our bond, like every other community college bond on the ballot in November, failed. So what did we do? The board got busy and located matching funds for the most critical problem facing that campus, and that is the Child Development Center. It's a $5 million project. We have our $2.5 million match in place. Many, and I support all of the community college programs, mind you, all over the state, but most of them do not have their match in place and are relying on hopefully being able to pass a bond to get that local match. That action will probably be more likely in the future, given the House action dealing with the double majority, giving schools now 4 opportunities every 2 years to go to the ballot instead of only one, which has been very, very problematic. So I'm hopeful that those other community colleges will be able to get their local match, but we have our match in place at Mount Hood. We have an absolutely critical need. It's the number one priority of the board and of that community, and the entire delegation, Representative Lim, Senator Moniz Anderson and all of us that are anywhere near Mount Hood Community College are strongly supporting this. So I would urge you to include this. I've talked to the governor about it. The governor would love us to get back in the program. He said it wasn't anything personal when he kicked us off the list. It was just that we didn't have our match. Well, we have our match now for a much smaller program, but a much more critical program. We will be able to serve, with this new facility, 240 3- and 4-year-olds in the Head Start program. That means that many more single parents will be able to lift themselves out of poverty and get an education and enter the workforce. And, you know, I like to tell people that the baby boomer generation is getting close to retirement. I'm already there. But those people, you know, are now in their 50s and early 60s, and we're going to need to replace them with an educated workforce. Community colleges is where it happens, and community colleges can only serve single-parent family situations if they have child care available. So I would urge you to add Mount Hood's program back into the list as you forward this bill along. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Come on, yes.
And I'm playing hooky from Ways and Means, so I'm going to skip
out. Get out of here.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. And members of the committee, I'm Senator Lori Moniz Anderson. I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. Thank you for allowing me to testify on House Bill 3345. We have a number of bills circulating regarding capital construction costs. I know I have two. Representative Lim has one. We both signed on each other's bills because this is truly an extremely important issue. We really need a substantial advancement in the Oregon Community College Capital Construction Fund. We at Mount Hood Community College have never passed one bond measure since the community college was built. We're just a part of that conservative part of East Multnomah County with a very low tax base and truly not enough money to go around. And not just community colleges. I won't go into Multnomah County or Mount Hood Community College, but I do want you to pay attention to the list. Last session, Oregon Community Colleges received capital appropriations of $38.5 million, and that was for 7 colleges. But before 2005, it had been 25 years since Oregon's community colleges received general obligation bonds from the state. So I think it really makes very much sense to go get everyone back on the list in House Bill 3345, and I would urge your passage of this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandra. Any questions of the senator?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crowell.
Senator, you get stuck with the question because you're the only one still sitting. Everybody else abandoned you. And so, but my question is, Representative Hunt mentioned that there were 15 projects and $108 million in projects. I haven't added totaled them up, but it only has 14 projects listed.
I added that up myself, and I did not understand where the other three colleges were. So, no, I am afraid I cannot answer that question.
Okay. Right. I did nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Olson, do you have a response, sir?
Well, the ones that are specifically different, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the ones that are specifically different in House Bill 3345 and 5516, the governor's budget bill, are the McMinnville campus of Chemeketa Community College. So there's two lines on number three. If we're looking at House Bill 3345.
Well, let me clarify something, Mr. Chair. Maybe Representative Hunt just simply misspoke himself. He said there were 15 projects. There's only 14 listed here. What happened to the other one?
I think maybe these are two projects here.
Oh, okay.
A and B.
Two projects for one community college.
Okay.
He doesn't have to be good with math anyway.
Mr. Chair.
The reason why I wasn't there.
Representative Greenlee.
Can you help me understand what we're doing with this bill?
We are.
The co-chairs have their budget.
Right.
And we're going to vote on this and send it on to Ways and Means. and then they're going to do what they want?
That is the process, Representative. It is one way for us to register our opinion in the...
Also, I think with this bill, it adds back those community colleges that were not on the list, and Ways and Means does not have that. And so this actually adds, and I'm not sure which, I know Mount Hood was left off the list, so it will actually put everyone back into the pool.
Should we be looking, Mr. Chair, at the university items that are in the first?
We will have testimony from the university system following the center.
And would our job be to say, well, why are you doing this one? That sort of thing.
If there is, if there are projects on the list that you feel should be removed, that I believe either in this committee or in the probably in the full education committee, that would be the best opportunity.
You might ask. I mean, yeah, why a field house expansion when we don't have much money? That kind of question.
Mr. Olson, do you have some clarification?
Just to finish what we were discussing before, I believe it's a good question about the 15. I believe it is 15 because there's two under Chemeketa. So the ones different are the McMinnville campus of Chemeketa, the Klamath Community College project, Mount Hood Community College Child Development Center, and then it, compared to the other bill, it renames and ups by $250,000 the project on Lynn Benton. It's a science and health project instead of a library and student services renovation, and it's $250,000 more. That's in line 6, number 9, under Lynn Benton. So, again, it's Chemeketa, Klamath, Lynn Benton, and Mount Hood Community Colleges are the ones affected by my understanding of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For your help. Thank you. Thank you, Senator, for being here.
Thank you, Committee.
And Representative Lynn, thank you for we'll be testifying in front of the full committee about this.
Yes, I'd love to. And then I was going to testify, but I will reserve the later time.
Thank you very much.
And then especially House Bill 3345 is a fair bill because the governors in the budget, three community colleges left out. This is more inclusive. So especially that the Section 27 includes Mount Hood Community Colleges of my district. For the record, that the Mount Hood Community College is not in the Mount Hood area. That is in Gresham.
So noted, Representative. Thank you very much. Mr. Chancellor. A great day to play to, sir.
Turn the microphone the right way. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, George Kernsteiner with the Oregon University System, and I'm mindful of the time and the fact that there are many folks here from the community colleges to testify. Let me just give you first a brief overview of what you have before you with respect to the projects from the Oregon University System, and then talk briefly about what I think the important features of those are. The first thing to be noted, and this is in response to Representative Greenwich's, what I'm assuming his question to be, for the community colleges, what you have before you are those projects that the community colleges will undertake using state-backed bonds, the Article 11G bonds. The community colleges, as you know, are not state agencies, and therefore the only projects really that this committee deals with on their behalf are those that involve state bonds. The Oregon University System, on the other hand, is a state agency, and therefore you have before you all of our projects, even those that are self-supported or supported by means other than state bonds. And some of the projects then are different in that respect, and therefore are not typically the things that we go into when we talk about what the state is responsible for funding. Those kinds of projects, in fact, because they are self-supported, and you'll note them under the, I don't have the bill in front of me, but the column called Article 11F bonds, those are paid for through fees that are paid by users of the facilities.
and therefore are not subject to the same kinds of restrictions or debt service from the general fund or the lottery or other state funds as the other projects about which I'm going to speak or the ones about which the community colleges will speak. And I hope that Representative Greenlee, that kind of gets to some of the questions here, because we have kind of a mix of various kinds of projects in our bill, in our portion of the bill, that's different from what you would find in the community college portion because of that self-support aspect. What you have before us, before you rather, is our capital construction budget for 2007-2009. And it's our view that this is a capital budget that is about Oregon's future, its prosperity, and its competitive position in a global economy. This is a compendium of projects which addresses a variety of specific issues, but flows through, but has as its base an overarching effort to provide for Oregon the opportunity to have an educated citizenry, economic prosperity, and an innovation economy. You will see some of the projects specifically address one or another of those aspects, but in their totality, they really are about the future, about growth, and about the economic achievement of Oregon students. Before you in our budget, there are 46 projects with about $595 million worth of limitation or appropriation, of which the bonds are about $395 million. The state bonds, which are supported by the state itself, are about $270 million out of that total. And typically, those are the things that we talk about in this session, because those are the ones that the state is investing in. Those are the projects that typically are result in facilities that we use to educate students or to conduct research.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greenlee.
Is that the 11G?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, that's the 11G and the lottery bonds.
And the lottery.
And those are typically the ones that we'll be addressing in these in this today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. What we're looking at is a combination then of projects which involve a variety of funding sources, even within those that support education and research. We have among those projects more than $80 million of donor funds identified. We have within those projects a variety of efforts that result in preparing more graduates, increasing the taxable income of Oregonians, increasing research, and providing opportunities for the commercialization of that research by Oregon businesses. The first category about which I want to speak is something we call capital repair. Historically, capital repair has been half in the operating budget and half in the capital budget, at about $12 million per biennium in each category. And that has been the case since 1993. What is proposed in the governor's recommended budget and in the bill before you is more than $80 million, which meets for the first time the requirement that we have to repair our buildings to a standard that is the sort of industry standard. There are industry standards in our industry, as in many others, that talk about the kind of repair you need to your buildings to keep them up so that they don't deteriorate. For higher education, that is approximately between 1.5% and 2.5% of the current replacement value of the facility. And what the $80 million that's in the governor's budget for capital repair will do is to represent the 1.5% for the very first time. So that historically we have been operating at about $24 million per biennium. This would more than triple that number and finally get us to a level that would make it possible for us not to increase the deferred maintenance backlog in the future. The reason that we have a deferred maintenance backlog that we've spoken about in this committee before of $640 million is that historically we've been spending $24 million a biennium when we should have been spending $80 million a biennium, and over a period of several biennia, that adds up to a larger and larger deferred maintenance backlog. So the first point to be made is this budget arrests that downward slide by investing $80 million, about $83 actually, in dealing with capital repair issues. Some of the projects that will be involved are renovations at Neuberger Hall at Portland State, Science 1 at Portland State, and you saw some of the science labs in Science 2 that President Bernstein talked about, the roof at Gilbert Hall at the University of Oregon, and Straub Hall, the ventilating system at the University of Oregon. These are very basic kinds of projects just to keep the buildings going. The second set of projects deal with deferred maintenance. These are the projects for buildings that have gone past their normal useful life of whatever building subsystem we're talking about and have now deteriorated to the point that we have to fix it or we have significant problems. The poster child for this will be Lincoln Hall at Portland State University. You just saw a slide about Lincoln Hall. What President Bernstein did not tell you is that Lincoln Hall is open today on the sufferance of the city of Portland. It was open for the last couple of years on a conditional use permit. The city said, if you don't fix this building or get the funding from the legislature to fix it, we may have to close you, so we're going to give you a conditional use permit to continue to operate. That conditional use permit expired on March 31st. So we now are open at one of the largest classroom buildings in the state on the sufferance of the city of Portland. As you know from just reading the Oregonian over the weekend, there are problems with the roof, there are problems with the foundation, there are problems with the electrical. I can also tell you there are problems with the plumbing. There are problems with pretty much every subsystem of that building, which was abandoned by the Portland Public School District in the early 1950s as unfixable. And we have been attempting to keep it going as one of the major classroom buildings in Oregon ever since. If that building were to close, we would lose 13% of the classroom space at the largest university in the state. And that is of concern to us. So that project has great prominence in the governor's recommended budget, about $29 million to repair Lincoln Hall. But there are others in those categories as well, perhaps not as dire as Lincoln Hall, but nonetheless important for us to keep those buildings functioning. Buildings such as Fenton Hall at the University of Oregon, which was built in 1905, and has subsystems that have not really been addressed since 1905, and in fact now requires significant work in order to keep that building intact and functional for the classroom purposes to which it is put. This is the mathematics building now at the University of Oregon. We have Inlow Hall at Eastern Oregon University, which has both classrooms and the administration of the university located within it, but also has beneath it some human remains that need to be properly and appropriately and sensitively covered as part of the renovation of that building. But in order to do that, we will be disturbing the ventilating system of that building, which is within inches of, underneath the building, inches of the remains. I cannot tell you why in 1929 the building was built as it was. I don't know. But I can tell you that in order to address the issues of that building, we need to move with dispatch and expedition. And I could go through many other deferred maintenance projects, but the second major portion of the governor's recommended budget is to begin to deal with some of the major deferred maintenance at several of the campuses in the system. The third set of projects which are before you are those projects that are related to growth in enrollment in very specific programs. Let's talk first about the Oregon Institute of Technology and the Health Technologies Program. That program will, in fact, increase enrollment in health technologies by 500 students a year once the program, which is in the operating side of the budget, and the building, which is in the capital side of the budget, come together and allow us to open for health technology professionals, radiologists, sonographers, a whole variety of the allied health professionals so needed throughout Oregon, but most especially needed in the rural parts of the state, which are served so well by Oregon Institute of Technology. That building is a $20 million building. $9 million of that is targeted to come from state general obligation bonds, 11G bonds. $11 million of it will come from donations that are already in hand in the bank, ready to go, if the state is able and willing to provide the $9 million of bonding, in order to then allow us to increase by 75 graduates a year the number of trained health technologists in this state. There are also projects related to the research and innovation agendas of the state. As we've discussed in this committee before, our faculty in Oregon, on a faculty member by faculty member basis, are among the most successful in the country at achieving and garnering federal research grants. Those grants, in fact, have allowed them to, it's their reputation and their work which has gotten them the grants, but in order to conduct that work, they often need laboratories that we don't currently have. The University of Oregon and Oregon State University both have major projects in this proposed capital budget, half of which are funded by donations, half of which would be funded by state bonds, that will lead to additional research capacity, both with respect to ONAMI and with respect to various kinds of biological and chemistry innovations at U of O and OSU. We have determined from the last time that the state invested in a major engineering building at Oregon State University, that the amount of research that the faculty are then able to garner and the amount of spin-off companies that then flow from that work is noticeable by the time you get to the third or fourth year. We're seeing that benefit already at the Kelly Engineering Center at OSU, to the point that, I'm going to have to look here and find my number, to the point that this year, they are generating $4 million of external research above what they were able to generate for lack of facilities in their older facility. We are looking at the University of Oregon, the Integrated Science Building, and at Oregon State, and the Linus Pauling Institute, more opportunities such as that, more opportunities for our faculty and students to demonstrate for the rest of the world both how good they are and how well we will be able to attract both federal funding and spin-off companies.
Mr. Chancellor, if I can interrupt slightly, we do have two other panels today,
right,
and I'm going to have to ask you to replay it. It's a great performance. I have to replay it again in front of the full education committee, but it sounds like a subject that you're passionate enough that you'd be willing to do that.
I would be willing to do that. Let me just close by saying that we have other projects at the other campuses that relate to enrollment and the opportunities which we will have to increase the economic and cultural activity of the state if you are able to fund this capital construction budget. Thank you.
Hold on. Any quick questions for the chancellor?
Yeah, I have a quick question.
Representative Greenlee.
When you have something in there like the the Stott Center expansion and things like that, where does that money come from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, I don't know on that particular project, but my suspicion is it's a combination of gifts and student fees, because that's a building that is used for student recreation right now. And I know that the donor after whom the building is named has continued to be generous in support of that building.
The only question I would have, Mr. Chancellor, and you can field this again in front of the full if you want to, but this is obviously a much needed for the state. I'm sure the question would rise for my colleagues 2 years from now. If we pass this, are you going to come back with another list that's equally long and equally as expensive? And what are your thoughts in terms of where we are now and what you see in the future?
Right.
Mr. Chair, the answer would be yes.
Absolutely.
And the answer would be you should hope that we would, because there will be a tremendous payoff for the state if we are to make these kinds of investments and to do it on a sustained basis, sustained in the way that other states have sustained those investments over the years, I think to their benefit.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. I'll ask you the same thing. You can hit it out of the park again next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. We have two. Do you want to call up the OCCA?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I have Rick Levine, Liz Goulard, and John Turner from the Oregon Community Colleges Association, please?
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Richard Levine.
I am speaking for the Oregon Community College Association. It's 17 community colleges and 350,000 students, and we will take your message to heart that you delivered to the chancellor and try to be brief. As Senator Mons Anderson mentioned, it had been 25 years since community colleges were funded by the legislature for construction. Just to give you an idea, the seven colleges that were funded at that time were Rogue Community College, Oregon Coast, Columbia Gorge, Clatsop, Tillamook Bay Community College, Southwestern Oregon Community College, and Klamath Community College. Local voters passed property tax measures to fund the Rogue, Oregon Coast, and Columbia Gorge Community College bonding packages and construction. Just from experience, you've got my written testimony. I've been involved in the last 8 or 9 years in five different bonding opportunities. Two are successful, as Representative Buckley knows. There's a saying in Jackson County that you have to go back to the voters three times before they'll vote for a bond levy, and it's held, actually, for, I think, almost two decades. And right now, just a point, there are only two functioning libraries in Jackson County as of last Friday. One is at Rogue Community College in downtown Medford, and the other in the Southern Oregon University Library. So all of our projects tend to be community-based projects, and they tend to work with the community and for the community. This package is a little over $103 million. It would allow Oregon's community colleges to build for the future and serve the current demand by Oregonians for business and business for training and educational opportunities. The Oregon statute requires a partnership with a local district for a dollar-for-dollar match, meaning that each college must raise half the money locally through fundraising or local bonding. Several colleges, and you'll hear from at least one other one, have already have private donations and are expanding their campaigns to acquire private funding for some projects. Those donations are contingent on having a match of dollars from the state. That is why we view this as an investment in the state for the people of Oregon. We have heard the comments in the building about the debt service Oregon has and will incur. We view our request as a true investment that will not only create jobs through the construction process, create revenues and profits via material purchases, and most importantly, create additional programs to train Oregonians and have them become self-sufficient. These facilities will create opportunities for economic development and new jobs as a result of a match between economic development and job training. The list in HB 3345, though alphabetical within the bill, has been prioritized by the community colleges, and you have a handout that shows the prioritization of the 15 projects to 14 colleges. As Representative Buckley asked the Chancellor, will we be back? As you can see by the priority list, yes, we will. There are two other sets of priority lists attached to the within the list, and those are for subsequent bienniums. That's my brief statement. As I mentioned, you do have my written statement, but today at the table with me are Liz Goulard, Vice President of Chemeketa Community College, who will discuss the health center-related projects, and John Turner at Blue Mountain Community College to discuss building projects in the outlying areas of the community college districts. We can answer many of the questions you might have, and thank you for allowing me to discuss this with you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Buckley and members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Goulard. I'm Vice President and Chief Academic Officer at Chemeketa Community College here in Salem. I'm here today to speak of the health sciences-related projects and to characterize those project requests at Oregon's community colleges that are referred to in House Bill 3345. Among the promises that we provide as community colleges is to keep the door open for college, and that is assisted through the state in two ways, by your support of the Community College Support Fund, but also, as you can see from these project requests, by allowing us to have the construction support necessary to have the classroom space to serve those students. Several legislative sessions ago, the legislature attached a budget note to the community college budget. It related to developing a plan to expand health care training programs. And the legislature at that time recognized the looming crisis in providing adequate health care workers for the economy. I want to just quote a few statistics to illustrate that point. The Employment Department documents a 24.8% increase in health care occupations between 2004 and 2014. This will translate to an additional demand for technologists and technicians of nearly 9,500 jobs, and health care support occupation demands of 18,000 jobs. Those figures don't include vacancy rates, so we know that the shortage is underestimated when you look at the actual vacancies and retirements out of the healthcare system. The health services industry in Oregon employs over 100,000 people, and current unfilled positions in that economy represent a loss to the economy of $42 million annually. These are good-paying jobs in a critically needed area of the economy. We do play a central role in providing a trained workforce for the healthcare industry. And in response to that budget note several sessions ago, we partnered to create something called the Community College's Healthcare Action Plan. New program development included many community college and university partnerships. We tapped expert curricula, and we used technology to serve both rural and urban areas of the state using the best curricula there was to offer. I want to give you just four examples to show the nature of the partnership. PCC partnered to provide medical lab technology training through a distance to other community college districts. Central Oregon Community College developed a distance learning nursing program. Lynn Benton Community College has deployed their radiologic technology training statewide. And OIT has partnered with a number of community colleges to coordinate real deliberate expansion of allied health training regionally, including Southern Oregon, the Mid Valley, and the Portland metro area. We wrote a grant to the federal government. We received $3 million and leveraged an additional $9 million from business and industry to expand programming. And I think you'll see that it's no coincidence that seven or more of the community college construction projects are health-related. Our health and our science labs are at capacity. We've done what we can with the resources we have to get to this point, but we can't expand further without your assistance. So I have a list. You have my written testimony. I have a list of those projects mentioned here, including projects at Chemeketa, Clackamas, Central Oregon, Lane, Lynn Benton, Treasure Valley, Umpqua, and then actually the new campus facilities at Clatsop and Klamath also include healthcare components. We believe that no other state investment will provide the direct return on investment like an investment in healthcare training. We have willing students. We have available jobs, and we have existing community partners to leverage any funding we can get. So we think these are good investments. Just a very quick example of the Classroom and Health Sciences Center at Chemeketa. You'll see it's a high priority, was a high priority on the governor's list, listed as a number two project. And it's not only the healthcare training component, as I've mentioned, but also the fact that we are desperate to replace some of our temporary modular buildings on the Salem campus. Senator Monroe mentioned the modulars at Mount Hood. We have similar modulars at Chemeketa. We actually purchased some used from Lynn Benton in the 1970s. And they have far exceeded their useful life. They're deteriorating extensively, and we're really at a crisis point for being able to provide some adequate classroom replacement space that will go with the health sciences lab space. So you can see from my written testimony the kinds of programs we would bring in. And last November, we held a bond election. We came within less than 0.5% of passing that bond. We planned to go back out, anticipated November 2008. And the first Chemeketa project is anticipated to be a 60,000-square-foot facility, which would be estimated at a total budget of $18 million, and the college would seek half of that from the Article 11G bonds. We also have a second project on the construction list, McMinnville Campus Facility serving Yamhill County. This project relates to an area of need that John Turner will address in his comments on outreach to underserved areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Turner.
Chair Buckley and members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak. I'm John Turner, the president of Blue Mountain Community College out in Pendleton. I'd like to talk a little bit about the impact of this bill on access to higher education in rural Oregon. I'd like to speak about three colleges specifically, Clatsop Community College over in Astoria and Klamath Falls, Klamath Community College down in Klamath Falls, and then Blue Mountain Community College out in Umatilla County. Along the I-5 corridor in this area of the state, you're usually within several choices of higher education in about a half an hour drive. If you look at the area that I serve, east of the Dalles, there are only three institutions of higher education in that part of the state. You've got Blue Mountain Community College, Eastern Oregon University, and Treasure Valley Community College over in Ontario. My service district is 18,000 square miles. So choices available to our students out in that area are very slim. Our students sometimes have to choose to either go across state lines to get the access that they need or just simply not go to college at all. At BMCC, we're trying to build a building in Hermiston that will allow us to teach lab sciences and give those students over there in that fastest growing region, part of Eastern Oregon, access to higher education. We formed a strong partnership with Eastern Oregon University and with the city of Hermiston. We've already raised $2 million in match against capital construction, and we think we've got an excellent opportunity for success in this project. This is precisely the type of strategy that Governor Kulongoski has asked us to pursue, a partnership between the community colleges and the university system. Taxpayers in rural areas already shoulder higher percentages of property tax because of essential services just cost more when they're spread across fewer number of people. We need your help in this project. The middle schools in the that 395 corridor from Stanfield, Echo, Hermiston, Umatilla are just busting at the seams. There's strong growth in that area, and they're going to need a place to go to school in about 3 or 4 years, and if we don't act on this now, we'll be asking ourselves why we didn't. Other colleges need your help, too. 10 years ago, Klamath Falls Community College was formed to meet the growing needs of the Klamath Basin. And in order to get started, they built a small campus using cheaper metal construction, temporary-style buildings. And now they've grown out to that capacity, and they lack lab sciences. They lack professional technical training areas. They've been cited by their accreditation agents as lacking a adequate library or learning resource center. They need to expand and grow, and that's what they're asking for the opportunity to do. Finally, I'll speak about Clatsop Community College in Astoria, which has been located since 1959 in a 100-year-old high school building that was deemed unsuitable for K-12 50 years ago. This facility cannot be renovated or brought up to code and does not meet the needs of the college. They've been cited by both our regional accrediting agency and the Oregon Department of Education for having inadequate facilities. They have a great plan to build a real campus, a new one, and a site selected over by Warrenton. They've been doing a lot of polling on what it's going to take to get their bond measure passed. I'm confident that they will. It's about a $60 million project, and like all the rest of us, they need some help from the state to make it real. So each year, the price of these projects goes up. If we don't start addressing them now, we'll turn around in 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 years, and the price will be higher, and we still will not have met the growing needs of our citizens. So I ask you to give this bill favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. And we will be moving this bill to the higher ed, to the full ed committee, so hopefully either you or other representatives will be able to be there on that hearing day to make the case. You make an excellent case. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for your time. Take the call, our last panel, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, a panel from Lynn Benton Community College, John McHurdle, Elizabeth Lundy, and J.J. Quinlan.
We'll take about 2 minutes each.
All right.
Elizabeth, why don't you just jump right in?
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Elizabeth Lundy, and I am the Director of Curriculum and Educational Assessment at Lynn Benton Community College. I have been, this is my 31st year in education. I've been a teacher at middle school, high school, at the university, faculty at the community college, and now a dean. I just want to express up front and confess my enthusiasm and bias that will come out. We are here not to to showcase Lynn Benton, but to try to put a personal face on what you have heard, to talk just a little bit about the people and how this is affecting. We do strongly support all of the projects that have been put forward in this bill, and we support the prioritization that was put through by the community colleges. So this is just one way for you to get a sense of what this looks like on the other end. Some of my colleagues have done a very good job of that. We have a science facility that's aging. It's 34 years old. It has plumbing that's been removed because the sinks leak so badly that now the students are trying to find ways to keep their books, their laptops, their calculators from falling into the holes that have been left by the sinks that we've need to remove. It was designed for another time, a time when students would sit in tablet armchairs so that the rooms could seat 35 students at tablet armchairs. They had a pencil and a tablet. They listened and they learned. Now, information is available to these students constantly. They need to not just listen and learn. They need to learn how to learn, and they need to be able to solve problems in groups using the kind of technology that no one thought of in 1972. They have their laptops, they have their calculators, and they are squished into these rooms trying to learn how to be part of a productive workforce in a facility that, frankly, holds them back. When this facility was built, there was no ADA. There was not a lot of concern for environmental. There was not a lot of concern for safety issues. We have obsolete spaces, including dark rooms, projection booths, all kinds of things that cannot be used for anything except, frankly, to put our new faculty in. They're using them as offices, microscope closets, etc. And we have huge capacity problems. We have over 25,000 students. I have 48 seats in biology labs total. I have 48 seats in chemistry labs total. That's all we've got. Our project asks the state to come up with $3.75 million to support this project, a project that we will match. We have about 3,700 students every year that are not being served, students that we need to be able to attract into math and science in order to be able to meet the needs for manufacturing, the needs you've already heard around allied health, a huge need for increased number of engineers in the state of Oregon, our incoming workers and our incumbent workers that are needing retraining, and something that is personally very dear to me, the elementary and secondary teachers that are being trained. More than half of the people who are going out to teach in elementary schools get their math and science background in a community college. They are learning by the facilities that they are in right now. Undergraduate level is a place where young people, most especially women and minorities, discontinue their study of science and mathematics. This is a serious loss of talent, a loss that Oregon's people and Oregon's economy cannot afford. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is J.J. Quinlivan. I'm the student body president at Lynn Benton Community College. My address is 2923 Northeast Glacier Way, Corvallis, Oregon, 97330. And I'm here to tell you a little bit of some of the stories of the student at Lynn Benton Community College and what they experienced. Now, the stories I'm going to relate are from the students at our community college, but there you can find them at everyone in the state. So I'll start with myself. I'm currently in a biology class. I'm permitted to sign up for classes a little bit later than some of the students because I'm a freshman, and there was one waiting list spot left in a class, and the only class left was one that met during lunch. Now, I was lucky to be able to get into that one. Several other students after me were only able to get into biology classes where the laboratory met in the evening, because again, as Elizabeth says, we only have 48 seats, so the laboratory, the biology classes are only each meeting once a week in the room, and then basically doing that, packing that room as often as possible. Now, I've talked to other students. I have a friend that is a nursing student, and her husband was laid off. She wanted to go back to school to be a nurse. She met all the qualifications to get in the nursing program, but because of the limited seats we have in our biology and our laboratories, had to wait an entire year in order to get into the program. I have another student that wanted to get into a physics classroom, was unable to even get on the waiting list, showed up in the lecture on the first day and saw that the room, because it's one of those small, large rooms with tablets, only had 18 students in it, and wondered why he couldn't get into a class at 18 students. What he didn't realize is that our laboratories are set up so small and we have so few, that's why he couldn't get into class. Mm-hmm. Another chemistry student who walks in the chemistry class note he was just barely able to get into, and wonders why there's only 18 students in a classroom that can hold 24 or 25, and the reason is because there's only two flume hoods. All the equipment to monitor the labs is along the shelf on a wall because the laboratory desks are so old, and then when he has to actually record his laboratory results, he has to go into a separate closet that is now where the laptops and the computer sit, where he can record the results of his lab results. Okay, I mean, it's amazing. As Elizabeth said, the equipment is very old in these classrooms. I have a friend that got laid off from Hewlett Packard. He has 2 years of workman's comp to pay for his college education, and he cannot get into the biology class that he needs to. He's been trying now for a year and a half to simply get into one of the classes. We also have veterans that are returning from the Iraq War that the government's paying for their education, but they cannot get into the classes they need. The classes fill in the average about 7 or 8 minutes after they open. So the worst is when you have a series of classes. You get into the fall class, and then the class we try to get into the winter one, you know, like the physics 1, 2, and 3. And when you're in the second year, basically what happens is you can't get into the class, and you have to return an entire year later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hate to move you along, but I need to keep these two here so I can pass this bill out of committee today. So
hi, I'm John Farrell, the Director of Development at Lynn Benton Community College. I'm the guy who raises the money. And it's a $7.5 million project you're hearing about. We have to have the $3.75 from you folks. How we've done it otherwise is we're raising private money. We've raised $1.2 million in private money. A lot of that's come from organizations that have given the largest gift ever. The college is using certificates of participation to cover what we don't raise privately. That's why we have to have the $3.75 from you folks. It's our number one project. You know, what happens is if we don't get the money from you folks, we have to turn back $600,000 in private money because we can't make the project go. We've worked really hard, and our industry folks have worked very hard with the federal government to get $2 million in equipment to go in those new buildings. If we don't get the $3.75 million from you folks, that $2 million worth of opportunity with the federal dollars go away. And as you all know, that student access, it isn't just about student financial aid. It's places for people to sit. And that's what we need. We need your help. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
You made a great case. You convinced me.
Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and close the thank you so much for being here. And please feel free to come back with us before the full committee. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3345. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3345.
Representative Cremel.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3345 to the full committee on education.
With a due pass? Or?
Yes, with a due pass recommendation.
If we need it, yeah. Representative Cremel moves House Bill 3345 to the full House Committee on Education with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll? That's all right.
Representative Clem.
Excused.
Greenlight?
Aye.
Representative
Trummel?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Excused.
Chair
Buck? Aye. The motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you for hanging in there with me. I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3345 and adjourn the House Committee on Education Subcommittee on Higher Education.